I call this meeting the Judiciary Committee to order. Members, take your seats. A quorum is present. Members, today we'll be hearing up three bills. House File 998, Representative Eklund, sentencing veterans for criminal offenses related to service-related disorders. House File 3749, Representative Edelson, Reproductive Health Service and Facilities Access, Interference Prohibited. And House File 3274, Representative Carlson, Bill for an Act relating to real property, amending the Minnesota Common Interest Ownership Act. But first, we have the minutes of February 25th.
So moved.
They have been moved by Chair Considine. Any discussion? All in favor of the February 25th minutes as written, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say no. Motion passes. The minutes of February 25th in the your packets are approved. First, Representative Eklund. Here you are. Come on down. The first bill we have for consideration is House File 998, Sentencing Veterans for Criminal Defense. I move that House File 998 be recommended be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. But, Representative Eklund, you have an author's amendment labeled A3 in your packets, members. May I have a motion to put the bill in the form that the author so desires?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Noor moved that. Any discussion? All in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say no. Motion passes. Chair Eklund, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm excited to be back in front of the Judiciary Committee again with this bill. It's an important piece of legislation. If this passes, ends up becoming law, it'll be the first of its kind in the country, and I'm incredibly proud to be carrying it. The amendment that you just authorized on page 2, line 16, it limits the use of the stay of adjudication. Representative Scott, I got that right this time anyways. Stay of adjudication under this bill to one felony offense. This was to address the concerns raised by prosecutors that the bill would be abused by habitual offenders and was critical to gaining MCAA's support of the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. The amendment goes to page 3, line 12, waives the veteran's right to challenge the implied consent in DWI cases. This allows the use of the case for enhanced ability of future offenses and license revocation purposes while still giving the veterans the benefit of the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. This amendment was drafted in consultation with the DWI Task Force in response to concerns raised last session, and they have stated the task force is neutral now due to this provision. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the bill before you, the Veterans Restorative Justice Act, provides a framework for Minnesota courts on sentencing a justice-involved veteran, which will ensure treatment for service-related disorders that lead to a criminal offense while allowing the veteran the opportunity to fully reintegrate with the community without a record of conviction. It is not a free ride, as the veteran defendant will be required to submit to whatever rehabilitative efforts the court deems necessary to protect public safety. The language was developed through an 18-month collaboration of key Minnesota veterans criminal justice stakeholders. It adapts and improves on the best practices for Minnesota and other states' veterans courts and veterans sentencing statutes, including California Penal Code 1170.9, Texas Government Code Chapter 124, and the existing drug sentencing options of Minnesota Statute 152.18. I have with me a number of testifiers, and I would like to turn it over to them for the remainder of the presentation.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair Eklund. Mr. Orpitt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee members. I'm happy to be here again. I'm here to stand for questions if anybody has any technical questions, or I can talk about the true benefit to passing this bill and what it would mean for our combat vets.
Mr. Orpitt, could you just state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Pete Orpitt. I'm the Washington County Attorney.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So at any rate, I could either stand for questions or I can make a brief pitch. And if I might, Mr. Chair, this bill is going to make uniform throughout the state available services for returning combat vets who've suffered great trauma. They're out there. I have a vibrant court in my county. We've treated probably close to 50 veterans, including 4 women who were victims of military sexual trauma. I've seen miracle recoveries happen. I'd remind folks that this is different than any other restorative justice in that These veterans, when they went into service, they weren't criminals. Remember when they went in, you couldn't even go in with a DWI conviction. So what happened to them when they came out? The people I deal with have had multiple tours, not just one, multiple tours. And inevitably, something's going to break after that, and they get involved in our criminal justice system. My position is we as a society broke them. We're responsible to fix them. And they're fixable. And that's the good news. I've lost one veteran in my veterans court that I had to boot out of many. And like I say, the miracles we see when they get the right help from peers, from the Veterans Administration, we've made great strides in how to treat these people, and it works. Thank you for allowing me that.
Thank you, Mr. Orpit. Before we go to questions, we have Chair Liebling. I don't know if any others. But to reiterate what Mr. Orpit said about folks not being able to get in with convictions, it's absolutely true. When I went through MEPS down there at Fort Snelling, at the height of the war, okay, so the restrictions, of course, were at minimum. They were still trying to up our numbers. You asked the question, and all these questions, they grill you, and they said, have you ever been arrested for a traffic offense? And I said, no, which was true. I've never been arrested in this country. I am still an outlaw in Syria, unfortunately. But I said no, and it got to the point, and some E4 took me into a back room and said, well, we got to talk to you because you lied on your application. I said, are you kidding me? And I said, I've never been arrested for a traffic offense. It says right here, we got your traffic record. You have several speeding tickets from 2003. I said, yeah, they don't arrest you for traffic tickets in Minnesota. You know, it's a speeding ticket. So the misunderstanding there just illustrates, I mean, how difficult it is that these folks all coming in have clean records. You can't get in without a clean record. So something happened to them through the course of their service for our country that needs to be recognized in some kind of mitigating lens for this bill. So thank you very much for doing that. Chair Liebling.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Eklund and Mr. Orbit. This is really wonderful. I've been reading some of the letters, and it really is a compelling case. I just have a question. I'm looking at the fiscal note, as somebody suggested that I do, and it's great. It shows savings, which is wonderful. Savings, and it's such a great bill. I just wonder, when you read these fiscal notes, they're great because they kind of go through in detail, and they talk about what is being assumed. You know, sometimes in our bills, the way they're written, there are things we don't think through entirely, and so there are a whole list of assumptions about what will happen, starting on, let's see, my fiscal note doesn't have numbered pages, but starting where there's the bill description, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, I think it's the fourth page, and then the fifth page is like a whole list of descriptions that are kind of how this would work in practice. And I just wanted to ask whether Mr. Orpit has looked at those and agrees with them, just so that we are kind of all on the same page about how the bill would work. So there are certain things like the Sentencing Guidelines Commission assumes the dismissal relief would not be available for offenders facing presumptive commitment to prison, only the departure relief would be available. So there's just a whole list of those kinds of assumptions, and so I just wondered if you've looked at them, and we could just kind of have on the record that you're assuming too that this is how the bill works.
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. I do, Madam Chair. And in addition, if I could just tell you briefly from a micro position, when an offender comes into court, say in my county, we look to see if they're chemically dependent, if they need some type of therapy. That's always part of the equation. And typically, the county's responsible to pay for that treatment, that therapy. In this case, however, it goes to the Veterans Administration. It has saved my county thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And it works more effectively than current practices that other people go through. It has to be specific to combat vets to really make a difference, and it has been. So from my point of view, it's a great money saver for the people of Minnesota. Yeah. That's how I view it.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Considine.
Thank you, Chair Lesh. I'm just requesting a roll call on this.
Okay. Roll call has been requested. Any other? Oh, Chair Johnson.
Chair Left, Representative Eklund, thank you for bringing something like this forward. I wish we had our veteran courts in every county. They work fabulous. They are expensive, but they do work very well. Not every veteran can get into it. There's a process to get into the veterans court, and part of it is deals with, if I remember correctly, deals with past criminal history. But one thing that makes them work so well is generally they are on intensive supervised release, very, very intense probation. Are you planning to do the same type of deal with this program where it will be intensive supervision on these individuals that go through this system?
Chair Eklund.
Chair Lesh, Representative Johnson, yes, that's part of it. In the bill, as part of that amendment that we did, is that they have to submit to all the rehabilitation that is recommended through the practice of the court. And I just want to add, part of the reason that this bill struck me so well is I've had family members that have been gone through drug and alcohol court, and I see how effective those courts can be, and have those people, if they successfully complete them, be functioning members of society, and their success rates are high compared to a lot of the other programs. So that's one of the reasons that this bill really tugged at my heart.
Mr. Chair, may I add, Senator, that in addition to the normal probate, well, they're on probation. In fact, in my county, I have a veteran who's very skilled in dealing with other veterans. That peer operation seems to work well. But in addition, best practices call for having mentors involved as well. And I have a group of mentors who we pair up with these young men and women coming through, and I treat them sort of like a canary in a coal mine. If the veteran's slipping, I'll hear from the mentor, I'll hear from the justice folks at the VA immediately, and then we bring them into court. But we have them routinely come back to court to monitor their progress and to praise them when they're doing well. And it's been a really good success between the mentors and the probation agents and the justice outreach folks at the VA.
Excellent. Thank you. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, Representative Eklund, and that's the issue I have. Overall, I like the concept of this bill, but I think we need to make sure that they are getting the intensive in the bill, that it's run like the Veterans Court, where they have the intense supervision, they have the mentors. If that's not in the bill, I'm not sure if every county is going to do that, and the program's not going to work, and I want to make sure this works.
Thanks. Any other questions for Representative Cantrell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much, Representative Eklund, for bringing this bill forward. I just wanted to make a quick comment about what I've heard from a lot of veterans in my community in Savage, and it's that there's a real stigma from what he has seen. He has a lot of forgive me, my terminology is not maybe the most apt, but he's in charge of a lot of guys who are afraid to seek out mental health treatment or chemical dependency treatment because he told me there's a very real culture of, well, once it's identified that you either have a mental health problem or a substance dependency problem, that could negatively impact the remainder of your career in the armed forces or otherwise impact other areas of your life. So I think, you know, this is really an important step forward to making sure that we are fighting for the people who have fought for us in making sure that that they do have those avenues should something happen in this realm to have the fairness and leniency and path forward that otherwise may not have been available to them. So thank you again, Representative Buckland and Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have other testifiers, is that right?
Yes.
Let's get on those because we're kind of burning clock on this one. Who else, and thank you, Mr. Orpett,
thank
and you
Mr.
remain
Chair.
Around for questions. Thank you. Who else wants to come down? We got the Cav Scout.
I have Ramsey County Attorney John Choice here. I have a veteran that also wishes to testify.
Wonderful. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Choi. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is John Choi, and I serve as the Ramsey County Attorney, and it's my pleasure today to be here to support House Bill 998. I want to thank Representative Eklund for his leadership and others who have been involved in this, the creation of this bill. I want to also point out for the record that I'm also here on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. We have taken a position in support of this bill last year. In this process to get to this place of drafting this bill, I think this is really going to be one of the first types of or a law that would set in place a real meaningful way for veterans to participate in our treatment courts. As Pete Orpitt said, treatment courts across the state have shown very positive outcomes, much better than traditional probation or incarceration. And so these efforts are really critical, I think, in improving the quality of justice and public safety in our communities. This particular bill, it's been a product of a lot of stakeholders coming together and thinking about a way to actually make this worthwhile for our veteran community, who for sure deserve every ounce of our support. So with that, I'll just end my testimony because I know you're short on time.
Thank you. Thank you. And if we could just have you stick around for questions, Mr. Choi, so we get to the other testifiers with questions at the end. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, please come on down. Join us at the table here if you're going to testify. Mr. Tsai.
Chair Lesh.
Welcome.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Evan Tsai. I'm an assistant public defender in Ramsey County. I'm also a United States Marine veteran. Representative Lesh, thank you for your service, and as well as Representative Eklund and anybody else that has served our country honorably. I'm here to testify as a defense attorney and as somebody who has collaborated with John Choi and Pete Orpitt and other like-minded prosecutors around the state. This is a collaborative effort that, for the most part, justice partners all support. The idea is not just to protect veterans that have become involved in the criminal justice system, but to protect public safety from those that we've sent to fight our battles. I've been at this for quite some time now. With Mr. Choi, we started the Ramsey County Veterans Treatment Court, and the successes that we've seen are nothing short of miraculous. I know all of you are of the same mind as we. I know all of you want to do the right thing. I know that all of you want to do the right thing regardless of partisanship. So I implore you, see this thing through. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Tsai, for your testimony. We are going to hold off on questions until all the testimony is done, and just in the interest of time.
Copy that.
Thank you. Are there anyone else from the audience who wishes to be heard? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm placing on the desk here a coin I received from.
Sorry, we always have everyone who comes before the committee introduces themselves for the record.
My name is Jeff Johnson. I'm a resident of Shoreview. And I placed on the desk my coin that I received after I graduated from the Veterans Court in Ramsey County. And I'm sitting before you well, because among other things, it drove a whole new look at me by the VA for my medications. I'm also looking at you as someone that would have been a felon. I attempted suicide. The Ramsey County Sheriff's Department, quite frankly, saved my life. And the Veterans Court in Ramsey County saved the rest of me. It got me new looks, got me treatment, got me new medications. I'm feeling well, probably for the first time in my adult life. This program works. more than anything, I wish I could have my wife here. She is so enamored with what happened. She doesn't feel that she got her husband back. She feels that she got a husband that she loved even more. And that's what this program can do. And I can't thank Ramsey County Sheriff's Department, the VA, the gang from the Ramsey County District Court, and the judges, and all the other people that work with me. And if you can imagine, they had the audacity to give me a Marine as a mentor, and I'm an Army guy.
That's a little bit rough. That's kind of abusive, actually.
Everybody, you know, but that's okay. I've been trained to deal with adversity. I'm an Edina brat. And everybody's got their cross to bear in life, and being from Edina has been mine. But truly, there's another people who are restored in this whole process, and that's the families. It's the neighbors. Sometimes it's an employer. I've run across employers who will not let their veteran go, even in the adversity of being in Veterans Court. This works. It's worth our money and our time and our effort. And I wish it could apply to more veterans, but this bill, you know, it's limited as far as directing. It's those that were with TBI, with PTSD, and it's recognized by the VA. My PTSD is not recognized by the PA, by the VA. But they are at least willing to treat me for it. And they do a great job. I can't tell you the wonderful people I met, not only working for the court, but that were also in the Veterans Court program with me. Not one of those people would be someone that I would ever be embarrassed to have as a guest at Sunday dinner. And I think that's something that we all need to remember. These people come to us with drug and alcohol problems, some of them pretty severe. I had where I would pass out. I had 6 major falls down the stairway. These are all things that happen to these people. This helps deal with it. It helps correct it. And for those that are not sure they want to go through the process, guess what? It gives them the motivation to do it, because guess what happens if they don't? And I'm here to shout, there is nothing wrong with a gentle shove that's also kind of quietly called coercion. Do it. Pass this bill. It's an important bill.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Johnson. Are there questions from committee? Oh, are we going to have another testifier? We're going to wait till the end, Mr. Johnson, for questions, just because we're kind of burning through time a little bit. We got another Mr. Johnson. Come on down. Introduce yourself for the committee. And are there any other testifiers on this bill that really want to be heard on this? Raise your hand, please. Okay, you're the last one, Mr. Johnson. Welcome to the committee. And
thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tommy Johnson. I'm the legislative officer for the Department of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars. You've heard from prosecutors. You've heard from public defenders. You've heard from someone that attended this. This bill means that we know that veteran courts work. We know that at one time Minnesota was a leader in veteran court legislation. And we know that now in 2020, Minnesota is not a leader in veteran court legislation. We ask a lot of our young men and women who answered this great nation's call to war. As we're here today, we have 800 or so of our fellow citizens, Minnesota's finest, that recently deployed to the Middle East. And we have 800 and so more that are going to join them this spring. For some, it's their first trip to a war zone. For others, 3, 4, or more. We know that who knows what stresses that they are under? Who knows which deployment will cause the wound or someone to snap? We do know that one or more of this and the next deployment will probably suffer. We do know that the unseen wounds of war often fester for years, until unleashing the unseen demons that this war, that war creates. The bill that we're discussing today is about caring and healing those that were wounded by service, PTSD, TBI, MST. MST stands for military sexual trauma. It's a nice word to say rape, which is not a nice thing. This bill is the difference from some little kid being able to say, my mommy is a hero, instead of my mommy is a convict. This bill is supported by all nine of Minnesota's congressionally chartered veteran service organizations, from the American Legion to the Military Order of the Purple Heart to the Veterans of Foreign Wars. This bill saves Minnesota taxpayers $1,307,000 in just the first 2 years. It establishes a uniform and statewide standard for veteran courts so that justice is not dependent on a county line. It makes counties in greater Minnesota eligible for federal funding once the federal bill passes and once this bill passes. And most importantly of all, it will allow some little kid to say, my mommy is a hero. We urge you to pass this bill. We thank you for your time and attention, and I am willing to take any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Johnson. There being no other testifiers, we'll move to questions from the committee who have not asked questions yet. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm not sure, Representative Eklund, if this is for you or for one of the county attorneys who are here. But on section subdivision 2 at line 3.22, it says the defendant is in substantial compliance with the conditions of probation. Could you just define for me what substantial compliance means?
Mr. Eklund, or Representative Eklund, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Robbins, I think I better phone a friend on this one. So.
Thank you.
Wow. Okay, Mr. Orpitt. Of course, substantial means something very different to Mr. Orpitt than most people too, right? Is that right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What it means, we keep it somewhat vague because what we know in any kind of treatment program, sometimes it's two steps forward, one step back. So if somebody's missing appointments, then the alarm goes off. We bring them back to court. We put some more additional work on that veteran. And then they substantial, and we call that they substantially complied. Maybe they had a slip and went and drank one time. But that gives us an opportunity to intervene even harder than we were. Because the idea is we want them to succeed. We want them to get back with their families and their partners and loved ones. And we want them fixed. And so substantial compliance is, notwithstanding they might have had a slip or a dirty UA during that time, in the end, we think we've taken them pretty far.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, failing a drug test maybe would be still okay under this rule. What about a DWI, for example?
You know, I'm a little different than some of my colleagues. You know, I really look at this as an opportunity to restore these folks. So maybe I'm a little softer than others, not necessarily, but the whole idea is I want them to succeed. Typical criminal court, somebody's on probation, they get a dirty UA, they're going to get a sanction, they might even get thrown back in jail or sent to prison. That's not what this is about. I don't want to play a gotcha game. That's why we work so well with the defense attorneys. We have a shared goal. We got to get this guy sober so we can take him to the next level of dealing with the underlying depression and PTSD and that. I hope I'm answering that.
Thank you, Representative Robbins.
Yes, thank you. That's very helpful, and I agree. We want everyone to succeed. I'm with you on what this bill is trying to accomplish. One quick follow-up. Have you spoken with the domestic violence community, and are they supportive of this?
Yes, ma'am. We've spoken with the Minnesota Coalition of Battered Women. This is a couple of years ago, by the way. We've been working on this for a while. I myself, before I set up my program, went and met with my partners at the Tubman Center, and they were enthusiastic. I think the people who really push for this program are the partners and spouses of those I see in the court. And often, I'll admit, a lot of these are domestic-related, usually with alcohol and then a domestic fight. And it's the partner saying, I want my partner back, the one I had before you sent him overseas. And so I think I've got a lot of support from the victim community. And, in fact, I have a victim witness advocate assigned to every one of these cases to reach out to those families and loved ones to make sure we're all going to be on the same page as we go forward. And I've got nothing but support.
Thank you. Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was answered.
Wonderful. Excellent. Okay. I did ask if there was any other Oh, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, more of just a comment to Representative Eklund. Representative Eklund, we share an affinity family-wise for service to our country. I just wanted to publicly thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's long overdue, and I appreciate the comprehensive nature of it. And I wish you every success going forward with this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. Any final comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I certainly, last year, I certainly listened to you. I think it's evident by how we came back with this bill in a lot better shape than it was last year. And I just appreciate the support of the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Eklund. There being no other comments from the committee and seeing no other public testimony, a roll call having been requested, the committee CLA will take the roll.
Chair Lesch.
Aye.
Vice Chair Moeller. Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Albright.
Yes.
Representative Barr.
Yes.
Representative Cantrell.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Considine.
Yes.
Representative Hassan. Representative Herr. Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Liebling.
Yes.
Representative Lucero. Representative Mariani. Representative Noor.
Yes.
Representative O'Neill. Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Jean.
Yes.
There being 12 votes in favor and zero opposed, the motion passes. You are on your way. The bill is passed as amended and referred to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Eklund.
Thank you
to all the testifiers as well. You did an outstanding job today and gave great reasons as why this is a good idea. The next bill that came up, that is coming up, is Representative Edelson. Another person who's crossed a bear is being from Edina, similar to the Cav Scout that testified earlier. We never lose an opportunity to haze Edina around here when we can.
Representative Lesch, Chair Lesch.
Yes, Chair Scott.
If I might add and pile onto that.
Yeah, of course.
Just wanted to go on the record that the Andover girls hockey team defeated the Edina girls hockey team in the state championship game last weekend. We are the state champs.
I'm wounded.
We have broken the dynasty in girls hockey.
I kind of like that. I will give you an opportunity to respond, Representative Edelson, but I don't want to throw you off your game. So you can
thank
defer.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Scott, I'm very proud of your team. I was.
Thank you.
Yes, you have to lose sometimes.
So, Representative Edelson, we have before it, well, House File 3749. I will move that House File 3749 be recommended to be placed on the general register, and you have an A1 amendment.
I have an A2 amendment. I think Representative Albright has an A1 amendment.
Okay, this is okay. Right, so we've got the A2. I will move that the A1 amendment. Oh, the A2 amendment. Right. Keep saying A1. It says A1. I'll move the A2 amendment. In order to get the bill in the shape that the author so desires. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. The A2 amendment is adopted, and we will consider the A1 amendment to the A2 amendment at a later point. But why don't you go ahead to your bill as amended, Representative Edelson?
Thank you, Chair. Women should never have to choose between their safety and their health care. A woman's right to access medical care shouldn't be accompanied by feelings of threat or intimidation. I have heard many stories that have underscored why this legislation is important in the state of Minnesota. I would like to share one of the stories with you today. I'd also like to note that, members, you have a letter from someone in my district, in Edina, who has an experience herself that she wanted to share with committee members. A patient arrived at a Robbinsdale Women's Center, one of the independent clinics serving our state, in a cab. Many anti-choice protesters were pacing at the entrance of the parking lot, so the taxi dropped the patient off in the street. When she tried to enter the clinic for her pre-scheduled appointment, she was intercepted by protesters who escorted her to a fake women's clinic across the street. As a result, she missed her appointment and was not able to receive the health care she was seeking for herself, and she had to reschedule to a later date. Women who are making healthcare decisions should not have to be threatened, rerouted, intimidated, or scared to simply access care. This legislation mimics the federal FACE Act with two exceptions. And I'll let my testifier, Maggie, speak to them when she walks through the bill. But we would be codifying the FACE Act, which was passed in 1994 here in our Minnesota law. I look forward to the discussion on how we can protect women and make sure they have access to the health care that they choose. I'll turn over to my first testifier, Maggie Meyer, from Narell, Minnesota.
Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Meyer. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the committee members. My name is Maggie Meyer, and I am the executive director of Narell Pro-Choice, Minnesota. Minnesota needs the FACE Act. I think we can all agree with Representative Edelson that Minnesotans should not have to choose between their safety and their health care. In 1994, the Federal FACE Act was signed into law in response to increased violence around reproductive health clinics. We've seen a similar increased violence in the past few years, including a shooting at a clinic in Colorado in 2015. Given the lack of enforcement of the current administration, states are in a unique position to make sure that laws that may get repealed or go unenforced at the federal level will still be enforced at the state level. It is more important than ever to safeguard our ability to make our own healthcare decisions and to make sure that patients and providers feel safe and secure. I would like to speak a little bit about what this bill does. The bill makes it a gross misdemeanor in the state of Minnesota for a person to intentionally obstruct, injure, intimidate, or interfere with a reproductive health services client, provider, or staff while they are entering or exiting a reproductive health clinic. It makes damage to the property of a reproductive health clinic or telephone interference with clinic operations gross misdemeanors because they interfere with access by patients and providers. It also makes any person who intentionally impedes or interferes with the operation of a motor vehicle as a person attempts to enter, exit, or park at a reproductive health care facility guilty of a gross misdemeanor. The two biggest differences between the Federal FACE Act and this bill are, one, the requirement for an investigation that allows prosecutors and law enforcement to tie the intent to prevent a person from receiving health care with the action of harassment, violence, and interference. And two, this bill would allow for Minnesotans to obtain a restraining order when they experience these behaviors at clinics to prevent future and further harm. I also want to speak to what this bill does not do. This bill expressly prohibits any impairment of constitutionally protected activities in Subdivision 8, including free speech and the right to assemble. The FACE Act protects our right to access medical care without feelings of threat, intimidation, or shame. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Meyer. Do we have other testimony, Representative Edelson?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do. Haley Brooke. I don't know if I'm not going to say your name right.
Come on up, Ms. Brooke. We're going to take questions at the end, so come on up and testify now. And Ms. Meyer, if you could just hang around in case we have questions, thank you. Ms. Brooke, please take a seat and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you to the chair and to the other members of the committee. My name is Haley Brooke, and I am the organizer at NARAL Pro-Choice Minnesota. Part of my job is to run the clinic escort program at the three independent abortion clinics in the state. This means that I get to host escort trainings, work with the clinics to make sure there are escorts there when requested, and I even get to escort pretty regularly myself. I first started as a clinic escort when I was in college at the only abortion provider in the state of North Dakota. It felt like such a tangible way that I could support a cause that was very close to my heart. I believe that everyone should be able to access healthcare free of shame and harassment. As my time as a volunteer clinic escort is what led me to accept my current position at NARAL so that it can be my job to make sure that there are always escorts available to support patients when they're needed. I've witnessed quite the spectrum of harassment during my time as an escort, and regardless of what they say, protesters' comments are always filled with assumptions, judgment, and shame. I'd like to speak specifically about the Robbinsdale Clinic. On the handout we provided, there's a photo of the diagram that I draw for our escort trainings. It's this one. It shows the overview of where the clinic is, the private property lines, and where escorts are supposed to stand. They are the red X's. And then it also includes where protesters often position themselves, and they are marked by the blue X's. As you can see, there is a decent amount of private property, which is very helpful so that protesters aren't able to get too close to patients once they're actually in the parking lot. But you can also see that there is a deer stand located in the property next door. This is so that protesters can stand in it and yell over the fence into the parking lot while patients are walking in. During these instances, escorts act as a sound barrier by talking to patients so that they don't have to listen to the harassment from the protesters. However, protesters still have a lot of opportunity to confront patients. When someone takes public transit and has to walk from the bus stop into the clinic, if a cab drops off patients on the street, or if their windows are rolled down when they're driving in, and protesters often try to hand over literature. These are just a few of the tactics protesters use to engage with patients and try to shame them out of receiving health care. Escorts practice complete non-engagement with protesters. We are not there to debate with anyone, rather solely to support patients. And while the escorts are trained to act as physical and sound barriers, there is always a concern that if things escalated, specifically if things got violent, escorts may be unable to protect themselves and the patients. Escorts are also trained to be very aware of their surroundings. They report any and all suspicious behavior to the clinics, and I'm sure it's comforting for the clinics to know that they do have eyes and ears outside of the clinic. We're also aware that escorts do not and cannot act in the same capacity as a security guard, for example, if things were to escalate. So their role is somewhat limited. There's, of course, a long history of police involvement when it comes to instances at the clinic, and over the last few months, a common scenario at the Robbinsdale Clinic is when a car parks on the street because they're confused about which one the real clinic is. On more than one occasion, an escort has stepped in when a protester is harassing a patient in their car to offer assistance to get them into the clinic. The protesters have then called the police because an escort crossed the street, which is public space, despite the fact that crossing the street is legal. This is just one of the many examples of when police have been called unnecessarily by protesters, which is an unfortunate waste of time, money, and resources. This is also a concern because if a situation ever became more serious, we want the police to know that we are calling on them because they're truly needed and hope that they would act accordingly. Since the protesters often call when police are not needed, we fear that this will create kind of a boy who cried wolf situation. Escorting is one of my favorite things to do, and being able to support people in that capacity is truly an honor. Escorts are heroes who stand out in the rain, in the shine, and the blizzards to ensure patient access in the state. However, escorts should not have to exist because people should be able to access healthcare without harassment. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Brooke. Are there other testifiers?
Chair, I have one more testifier, Dr. Ralph.
Okay, and is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify on the bill? Raise your hand, please. One, two, three. I see three right up there. So that's all we're going to do after the next testifier. Go ahead. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Hello. My name is Dr. Jessica Ralph. I am a practicing obstetrician-gynecologist, as well as the medical director of Whole Women's Health of the Twin Cities. And I just want to thank you for the time with all of you this morning. I'd like to tell you about a recent patient I took care of at my clinic. Our office is located in a medical office building near Hennepin County Medical Center, which does afford our clinic some anonymity. This particular patient is also familiar with another local abortion clinic in the Twin Cities area. And she told me, I was scared to be like the women who walk into the other clinic. Even before they've seen anyone, they've walked through all the protesters, they've been told horrible things, and they feel so stigmatized. It's awful. However, though this patient began the day feeling ashamed to find herself pregnant when she did not wish to be, her experience got to be different. She walked into our office, she talked to our staff and to the other patients. She read our book of letters that patients leave for one another. And by the time our appointment started, she told me, "I feel empowered now. Thank you." She wished that if any of her family or friends found themselves in a similar situation, she would tell them to come see us so that they could have the same kind affirming care that is free of shame and hate and anger. The FACE Act would allow any woman or pregnant person seeking care at any clinic in the state of Minnesota to have the same experience. And while protesters can still gather, as is their right, the intentional and direct intimidation of patients and staff would no longer be allowed. Furthermore, clinic staff, including myself, would have added protection as they come to and from work. I myself have been threatened by protesters, and my car has been stopped from leaving the parking lot, only to be called a murderer. When I leave work, unlike my physician colleagues at the hospital that I also work at, I make sure I don't look like a doctor. I don't wear scrubs, I don't wear my badge, I watch for followers, and I vary my route home every day. I am a professional, and I knew these things about my job when I started. And I often feel scared about what could happen if a protest turned sour. So I ask you to imagine what my patients feel like. Knowing that I would have recourse against a direct threat would make me and my staff feel a lot safer going to work every day. I sincerely hope that you support this bill and the protections it provides to my patients, myself, and my staff. I'm here to make sure that women continue to get the legal health care they deserve. Please help me provide it safely in Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Rao. And if you will stick around for questions, please. The next folks who want to testify, please make your way on down so we can get moving here. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Sandra Ramirez. I'm a 42-year resident of Minnesota, currently residing in Washington County. And I've been on the sidewalk with my young child for 6 years as a missionary to the preborn. I guess I'm just now a little late to the game, being open, honest, and transparent, learning about House File 3749, and I wanted to just share with you some of my personal experiences there the last 6 years with my infant, toddler, preschooler by my side. I know some of the testimony you heard here was that the escorts practice or exercise complete non-engagement. That has not been my experience there. My experience is being blocked on the path, on the public sidewalk, as I attempt to reach out to mothers, whether they're on their way into their appointment or on their way out post-abortive. I've had my property stolen as far as a sign stolen. I've been assaulted with my infant child in my arms by a post-abortive woman. There's been a number of times when the police have been called and haven't done their duty, haven't honored their oath to, you know, take care of business when people assault you or steal your property or damage your property. So I think there needs to be some balance here on both sides. So if we're going to extend special protection for aborticians or volunteer escorts, we need to also extend protection to peaceful protesters. The pro-lifers are often elderly. I've seen them battered on the sidewalk as well. I've seen cars run up, jump curbs, and try to run people down on the sidewalk. And I just think that there needs to be some balance. If this is what we're going to write, we need to balance it for the peaceful protesters as well. I mean, in my experience, they're law-abiding, they're peaceful, and they're genuinely concerned for victims of incest, victims of rape, victims of domestic violence. We see domestic violence there in the parking lot at at Robbinsdale. I have, anyway. And usually the security guard turns a blind eye to it. We are the ones who call the police for that woman who's being beaten in the parking lot at Robbinsdale, PA. So I just wanted to, I think this is an overreach. I mean, and seems redundant with the Access Act with FACE. I don't think this is something that we need in addition. And if you do feel like we need this in addition, we need to protect all parties involved on the sidewalk. Because from my point of view, typically the aggression is from the parents that are there to kill their children. They're hitting people in the head with bottles of water. They're trying to run them down with their cars. So protect us as well. And I'm welcome any questions you have. I was just looking through the line items. It just sounds to me like it's pretty subjective and it's going to bolster a lot of false allegations. And it seems redundant to add this.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Ramirez. Next testifier. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ann Redding, and I'm a resident of South Minneapolis, and I've been sidewalk counseling. I'm not a protester. I'm not hate-filled. I do not shame women. And I've been sidewalk counseling for multiple hours a week for 20 years, a few months shy of 20 years. And like Ms. Ramirez, the violence is usually from the boyfriends who are saying, get your effing ass in there, and the mothers who rip the literature out of the daughter's hands. And I'm very pro-choice. I'm for women receiving multiple choices when they come the day of their appointment to abort their child. And I show them compassion. I don't have a lot of set phrases that I use, but one of my main ones I say is, my name is Anne. I'm here to offer you love and support today. And what is your greatest fear being here today? And then they usually open up to me. And over the last 20 years, I've still remained in contact with women who have changed their mind the day of their abortion appointment. One had twins, and I had visited her when her children were four, and they're now in fourth grade. And she said, I thank God every time I see your picture because it reminds me of God placing you in my path and preventing me from doing harm to my twins. And so we are out there peacefully, and I have been bumped by a male partner of a woman who is on her path to abort her child. I've had pop poured on my literature and on my arm. I've been threatened. One man who I was just standing there peacefully saying, I'm here to offer you love and support, said, if you were in my country, I would kill you. So I've had threats against me for just standing, offering love and support. And I have also sidewalk counseled at the old Midwest Health Center, the present Midwest Health Center. I have sidewalk counseled at Planned Parenthood, where it's quite routine that angry people will act like they're going to try to run you over as you're standing on the sidewalk. And the escorts and the security for the abortion providers do not care, typically, if we are being assaulted, threatened, or pushed. And the security has never come to our defense when we are. And every single abortion clinic in the Twin Cities has multiple cameras. So this is a redundant law. If we threaten someone, people have recourse against us. It's not like their hands are tied. And the abortion clinics have video that's available to the police. And I've had good experiences with the police, but sometimes they do fail to take our side because, like everyone, people are divided in this nation. Some see us as protesters, not as a grandma, not as a neighbor, not as a mother, not as someone who declared I was a feminist at 9. I didn't know the word, but I have always been pro-woman. And that's the main reason I'm there, because women deserve more than one choice. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Redding. The last public testifier will be Chris Rush. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rush. Please introduce yourself for the record. Begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is not Chris Rush. My name is Brian
Moore. Is Chris Rush here?
He is okay, not.
You're stepping in for him.
I'm speaking for myself. My name is Brian Walker. I'm the program director of Pro-Life Action Ministries. I believe that this bill is crafted for us without putting our name in it. But for since the 80s, we've been training sidewalk counselors. We're not protesters at the abortion facilities in Duluth, Twin Cities, and Orlando, Florida. I've been a sidewalk counselor in Robbinsdale for 12 years, and there I'm there to offer help and resources to women and men going in to abort their children. Also, we're there to be of help to anyone that's coming in. We do help people walking along the streets. I've talked to them about their choices, the resources that are available. Also, there were some allegations made that I want to dispute and some of my problems with this proposed bill. The language in it, words like intimidation, threaten, very often because of the training by the NARAL people who have been out in Robbinsdale recently, this can be construed as any kind of conduct, any kind of speech, any kind of approach. I don't block anybody. I don't block cars. I don't intimidate anybody. You had a record of a woman that was so-called escorted across the street to the Robbinsdale Women's Center. Robbinsdale Women's Center has been there for decades for offering reasonable and practical alternatives to abortion across the street from the abortion facility in Robbinsdale for years. We don't escort anybody out over there. We walk with them. We befriend them for the small amount of time that we have. We're not coercing them or taking physically and grabbing their hand and dragging them across the street. Their willingness to go across the street is strictly voluntary on their part, and that's how we are trained. I can't account for the other people who might show up on the public sidewalk. That is their constitutional right. But we train our sidewalk counselors to be respectful, to have resources. We do not coerce anybody. And we are to constitute offering help and alternatives to abortion as being intimidating, then I think that this kind of bill is really content-based on the information that we are providing. Bills like this can override into any other area. What if somebody's on strike and offering informational literature to people going into a building that's on strike? Are we going to restrict them? Are we going to call them intimidating? Are we going to call the police? I've been called on the police many times by NARAL trainees who have frankly lied to the Robbinsdale Police Center about my actions. There's an injunction out there. We're not allowed to visibly to record them. But they can record us on cameras and cell phones. I have no recourse. I have no backing for my free speech rights and my rights to approach anybody peacefully with alternatives to abortion. If you have any more questions, I'll be very happy to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Walker. And if you could just stick around in case there are questions, we'd appreciate it.
Sure.
Members, we're going to move to questions and comments from members for testifiers or the author. But before we do that, members, I want us to all keep in mind, this is a sensitive, highly emotional issue on both sides, okay? And sometimes that gives rise to a questioning or pointed nature of argument that cannot be productive and can generate more heat than light. So I hope we can limit our questioning and comments to the legal questions before us about the appropriateness or inappropriateness of the language before us. And I think with that, the first thing we should probably do is consider the A1 amendment to the A2 amendment. Is that okay with you, Representative Albright? That's your amendment. Is that
Mr. Chair, the A1, I think you already adopted the A2.
We adopted the A2, and yours is the A1, the highway amendment, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's drafted to comport with the bill considering the A2, right? Okay. Do you want to move that then?
I would move, Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment.
Representative Albright has moved the A1 amendment. Go ahead, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, for context, I'm actually going to refer to a couple of similarities between
the bill and the A1 amendment, and I'm wondering if I might request some information from nonpartisan staff.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not sure if Mr. Walls or Mr. Johnson could answer me this, but Mr. Johnson, with regard to lines 1.9 of the bill, as well as 1.10, as well as 1.13 of the bill, concurrent with the amendment, lines 1.6 and 1.8. Is there currently, or would this be the first introduction where we define those terms?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, so my understanding is you're asking if we define interfere with, intimidate, and physical obstruction other places in statutes. Do I understand your question?
Mr. Johnson, Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, that is correct.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I believe that we do refer to intimidation. I'm not sure that we specifically define it within the fifth degree assault statute. The language there is relatively comparable to this language. Fifth degree assault does not use the word intimidate, but does use the intent to cause fear of another of immediate bodily harm. Without doing a deeper dive, I wasn't prepared to answer this specific question. I can't answer off specifically whether we do in fact define, intimidate, interfere with, or physical obstruction other places in statutes. I'm happy to answer that question offline if you need that.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, the purpose for the question is it is underlined in the bill, and so my assumption or presumption is that that would be the first introduction as a definition into statute. And I think as we contemplate the amendment, the similarity in terms of interference, obstruction, or physical or otherwise to an entrance or exit from making it impassable to a facility, I think is pertinent to the conversation, even though they may be separate and distinct in terms of one being a facility for the purposes of reproductive health services or to public a roadway or an airport, that type of thing. I think that there are similarities in terms of an interference, whether they be through interference, whether they be through verbal or other terms of intimidation or physical obstruction. I think there is a similarity between those. And the purpose of this amendment being offered, Mr. Chair, is really to draw an analogy between what occurred with Representative Zerwas's bill in the last biennium, or actually the last session, with regard to the objections to it. We heard, and from you yourself, in a debate with Representative Zerwas, made the point of saying that this was an effort to rack up political points. This is not to cast aspersions on you, Mr. Chair, but it is to point candidly to the bill itself and the intent of the bill as it would compare to the bill that Representative Zerwas and the amendment that we derive from it pertain to. Representative Edelson, I'm going to withdraw this amendment, but I think it is in light of the fact of a larger contextual consideration here that as was made reference to by Chair Lesh in the conversation, as well as our own governor just recently on February 21st, said that he would oppose with every fiber of his being any legislation that would curtail people's right to protest. So I have some follow-up questions for the author of the bill, Chair Lesh, and I hope you'll indulge me in those. But at this time, I would withdraw the A1 amendment.
Understood, Representative Albright. A1 is withdrawn. Go ahead with your questions, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Edelson, on page 2 of the bill, in subdivision 2, you outline the definition and the process for injury, intimidation, interference, which are prohibited. Is that new to statute, or is that outlined in statute anywhere currently?
Representative Edelson, if you want to answer that, you can. You can defer to research if you want to on that as well.
Chair, I would like to defer to research, House research.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, this exact language does not appear in this form anywhere else in statute. Many of these concepts appear in other locations in statute, including the assault statutes. There is coded currently next to this, there's an interference with access to a clinic statute that uses much of, but not all of, the same language.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, thank you for that reference. And Representative Edelson, I will draw your attention to statute 609.224 and 609.7475 that already exist that pertain to your subdivision 2. I will also draw your attention to, and Mr. Johnson, to subdivision 3, where Minnesota statute 609.595 is also already found in statute. You have amended it, but it is duplicative. Subdivision 4 is also found in statute 609.79. It's already existing. Subdivision 5, starting at line 2.28, is also found in Minnesota statute 609.7495. So I with great respect to your earlier comments, Chair Lesh, about the poignancy of the line of questioning, it is duplicative. And so my question is, in finality, thank you, Chair Lesh, a recent court ruling, McCullen versus Coakley. I'm not an attorney, but I do follow some of these. In that decision, the Supreme Court held that the constitutionality of legislation must not burden substantially more speech than is necessary to further the government's legitimate interests. And arguably, as we look at House File 3749, is a content-based speech restriction that is overburdensome and likely to invite a whole host of legal challenges. So in light of that statement, Representative Edelson, thank you, Chair Lesh, how do you reconcile this bill with that Supreme Court ruling?
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Albright. This bill mimics the federal law. And so in terms of the court case that you're found, all the research that I have done has said that it does not obstruct the First Amendment. So I just would withstand that we have people that are coming to us, not only from my community, but from across the state of Minnesota, that are saying they have fear on accessing the care. So we can't debate the legality of the services they're receiving. It's legal. But the fear that they feel is also real. And I want to make sure that this committee is hearing it. So whether it's duplicative in law, we haven't actually adopted the FACE Act in the state of Minnesota. In other states, they actually have, like Connecticut, California, New York, Washington. So what we are doing here is asking to adopt the federal rule here in the state of Minnesota, which is done often.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, I have nothing more.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Before we go to other questions, members, it's not typically my habit to, I try to defer as much as possible and not interject my personal opinion as chair on this, but since you did bring it up, Representative Albright, about the Zerwas bill, the free speech and the gross misdemeanor, I want to point out the opinion and perspective of the chair is bright line and distinctive here. Free speech is not a one-way street. You cannot beat people over the head with free speech when it suits you and then defer when it doesn't. That bill that came up on the floor regarding highway protest rights, I still absolutely would consistently take the same position. What's going on here in front of clinics is not simply a question of free speech. You all voted on another bill very similarly, a revenge porn bill that happened 3 years ago that was decried because of its violations over free speech. Someone maintains they have a absolute right
to show someone else a nude pic or a nude video because they have a free speech right to do it. In my opinion, there is a distinctive privacy right that we passed that bill over, and everyone at this table who was here that year voted for it because of the privacy interests of the victim in that case. You cannot dismiss the privacy question of a person trying to avail themselves of a constitutional right in this scenario. So to me, the question of free speech must be balanced with the privacy right of interest of individual women trying to seek their right to an abortion in this case. And absolutely, sidewalk counselors, and I always refer to people the way that they ask to be referred to, and you refer to yourselves as sidewalk counselors, so I will, in respect, refer to you that way, must defer to individual privacy rights in the instance as well. No matter when folks believe that ensoulment or life begins, we here at this committee are charged with making a legal determination under the Constitution. So I just wanted to make that statement and respond to that and make the distinction that was supremely constitutionally important to me on that point, Representative Albright. Thank you. Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Edelson, for bringing forward this bill. You know, abortion access, reproductive health access, is health care. That's what the courts have said. That's what our case law says. It's health care. So I look at this through a healthcare lens, and I think to myself, as somebody who had to frequently visit a hospital a couple of years ago, any cancer patient you know or someone who's gone through cancer can probably tell you about a couple of folks, and especially if they were really public about their cancer diagnosis, can tell you that they received, as well-intentioned as it was, sometimes very persistent folks saying, oh, you know, don't go on the chemotherapy. Try these essential oils. Try this other stuff. Anybody, especially high-profile people who get cancer, can tell you that they are harassed. That they are harassed because they are trying to actually seek appropriate treatment, appropriate healthcare options to treat them. So when I think about this, I think about what if I was going to my cancer treatment, right? If I was going to my clinic, and there were folks out there trying to block me from getting into my clinic, trying to block me from leaving the parking lot because they thought, no, you don't need the chemotherapy. Well, you need something else. And it really makes me highly uncomfortable that that there is a mindset out there that it is appropriate in any fashion to treat people with aggression or hostility when what they're trying to do is seek health care. You know, especially when it comes to something that is so personal, right? Is trying to access reproductive health care. Now, this could be on the entire spectrum of reproductive health care, right? Whether it's somebody who's going to an IVF clinic, right? Or whether it's somebody going in for a vasectomy. I mean, we can say, well, you know, everybody should have the right to go and protest these things, but they're not protesting that other stuff. They're certainly not protesting stuff that mainly pertains to men. We're talking about women trying to access health care and people who can get pregnant trying to access health care who feel uncomfortable, who feel like their access to health care is being deprived from them. And I thought that the chair made a fantastic point that we must defer always to privacy and that the freedom of speech is not a one-way street. It is not an absolute right. And I always believe that your right to speech stops when you start to harm somebody, right? And to the sidewalk counselors who came here today, I do appreciate your testimony. Given the description of what you described, the activities that you participate in, it doesn't appear that anything that you've described falls within this bill. So I think everybody can be fairly happy that this is just, as you said, Representative Edelson, an affirmation of an existing federal rule that other states have also adopted in the interest of protecting patients and patient access to health care. So I want to thank you again for bringing this bill forward. I think that everyone deserves to be able to access appropriate health care in a manner that is comfortable, in a manner that is supportive, without fear. Thank you, Representative Edelson and Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cantrell. Chair, Councilman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 39 years ago, when my wife and I first got married, we did not have money, And so my wife, when she found out she was pregnant, went to Planned Parenthood. And so the result of those visits to Planned Parenthood was an 8-pound, 8-ounce baby boy that is one of the best things that's ever happened in my life to me. But we would have struggled to try to find health care without going to Planned Parenthood. The Planned Parenthood office in Mankato does not offer abortions, but at this point, the place that we went to get our son's health started has protesters out in front of it. And, Mr. Chair, I actually struggle with that sidewalk counselor thing. A counselor, in my mind, has some sort of clinical training. And so I'm a little queasy about using that particular term. Thank you.
Chair, it's always my practice to refer to people in the way that they want to be referred to, but everyone is going to have their own opinion on that. Okay. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh. The testifier that's up there now, I can't remember your name.
Brian Walker.
It's a good name. It's the same first name as mine. I hope you spell it the right way with an I.
Always.
You said you had mentioned that there was an injunction that you could not videotape the interactions. Was that through a judge, and did you have an opportunity to go to court to speak against that injunction?
Mr. Walker.
No, I was not able to speak against that because that injunction was enforced before I was hired at Pro-Life Action Ministries. What that injunction is really tips the scales in favor of the escorts, and today it tips the scales in favor of NARAL, which on their website trains so-called escorts, clinical escorts, as they, by their own admission, are there to prevent people from hearing us or prevent people from getting our information. This is about sharing of information. The gentleman over there, I don't know his name, talked about that abortion is health care. We could dispute that, but the very fact that we are here is really because my endeavors out there on the street are being questioned because of the content. Otherwise, we all would not be here. If this was about handing out literature during a strike in front of a public school when the principal comes in and he or she feels intimidated, we would not be here about this issue. And really it's about offering alternatives to women so they have choices about abortion. I'm post-abortive myself. I remember dropping off my wife in New York City over 40 years ago. And I'd wish right now that had been somebody peaceful like me, gently offering alternatives to abortion. I'd have another son now. And so we serve our purposes. To the gentleman who talked about counselors should be somebody that's clinically trained. I guess draft counselors should have been clinically trained or had some degree. I was a draft counselor way back in the NOM days. Drew a high number. Kudos to the men and women who have served. But counselor is a term, it's not a term of a medical definition. It's like a term of art, and I think it should be allowed as such. We're not out there saying we have degrees. We make no pretense about that, but we're there just to offer help.
Mr. Walker.
Yes, sir.
We're not debating the term counselor. So, and I was just going to remind folks that we have 6 minutes left in committee, and we have Representative Lucero, Scott, Zhang, and Liebling, and it is the chair's intent to vote on this bill. So if we could wrap it up, I'm sure Chair Johnson has another question, Mr. Walker.
Yes, sir.
Chair Lesh, not really a question, a little bit of a comment. This bill bothers me. We had, as Representative Albright brought up, we had the protester bill the last couple of years from Representative Zerwas. And during the testimony, we're hearing the same argument that your side of the aisle said it was not an issue. We shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be doing that. And that affected many thousands of people that were trying to get to work, get to home. There were ambulances that could not get to a hospital or to the call they were going on because the protesters had shut down the roads. People missed their flights, important meetings. We had one person did not get to her four-month-out scheduled appointment at Mayo Clinic and had to reschedule 6 months later because the roads were blocked by protesters. But that wasn't an issue. Here we're talking about people going in to murder children. I don't care what you say it is. That's what it is. The child in the womb is a child. Representative Cantrell mentioned that it's a medical facility that's not licensed, regulated, or inspected. That's not a license. That's not a healthcare facility. I'm really frustrated with this bill. Being somebody that was adopted at the age of 2 months, if I was born a decade later, I probably wouldn't be here because of Roe v. Wade. The people have a right, a free speech right, and this goes well beyond what is constitutionally allowed. Please vote no.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start with asking for roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to ask a question to the testifier, the doctor, and I apologize. I didn't get the last name. Is it
Ralph?
Ralph? Okay.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I agree with you. One of your comments that you made was to keep women safe, and that's the absolute, I agree with you. We want to ensure that there's a climate and an atmosphere where women are definitely safe. And in your testimony, because of that, you also said something to the effect of, and I can't quote it verbatim, but it was to the effect of, we need to support this bill so that women can feel safe with the provisions in the bill. So based on what Representative Albright was highlighting, I'm intrigued with the conversation that there is already, much of this bill is already in statute. And so I'm trying to rectify that reality, that truth, with your comments about we wanted to ensure that women are safe. Well, if current law, and I'll just draw members' attention and the testifier's attention, starting on line 2.28, obstructing access prohibited, a person who intentionally impedes or interferes, okay, so that's the new language. Existing language in current law says a person is guilty of a gross misdemeanor who intentionally or physically obstructs an individual's access or egress from a facility. So there's already a law in the books that would allow for the prosecution. And in this case, it's a gross misdemeanor to interfere with. So how do you rectify the fact that there is current law that would ensure that women are currently safe?
Dr. Rao.
So I guess I would say that this bill is looking specifically at access to our reproductive health clinics, and that we want to have access without being physically obstructed, which I think is similar but not exact to the line item that you are drawing. And so, again, while I am, like many of you, not a legal scholar, and I am speaking to the patient, clinic staff, and physician experience of everyday activity at these clinics, that is what we hope to gain by this bill.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I won't ask any more to the testifier. Current law says physically obstructs. That's already against the law. And it's a gross misdemeanor. And that's for anything, which would include the facilities you're referring to. So it's already against the law to do that. So passing this law doesn't add anything new. And in fact, it doesn't even enhance the penalty because it's currently a gross misdemeanor to engage in that behavior. But it goes on, the use of a telephone. I would draw a member's attention to 609.79, obscene or harassing phone calls. It's already against the law. The bill before us in subdivision 3, damage to property. Well, damage to property is already law 609.595. It's already there. So this is stacking up on top of existing law. It doesn't add anything new other than make a greater penalty. So essentially what I'm understanding the bill author to do is simply make it things that are against the law already have a higher penalty for the facilities you're referring to. And if we're not in, if we're not prosecuting and using current law to ensure the safety and the use or the free access to the facilities, why do you think adding another law that does nearly identical language would make a difference? I guess I'm not asking a question because we're short on time.
It was rhetorical.
Yes, it was rhetorical, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad we're having this conversation. And I have had the opportunity to be outside of an abortion clinic. And I can tell you it's nothing, in my experience, like what was characterized here. And I believe it's a mischaracterization of what really happens as a rule outside of abortion clinics. I've never known them to be anything but peaceable. And so to get at that point, I would like to hear from the testifiers in favor of this bill, how many prosecutions you've had under current law. Because these things that, as Representative Lucero pointed out, are already against the law. So if it's really an issue, are you prosecuting those? And I'm not saying that everybody's an angel out there. But I do know Mr. Walker, and I do know of his organization, and they, in their training, and when they speak with people that with his organization, it is nothing but peace and just making themselves available to these women. So I would like to hear about, you know, how prevalent is this problem here in the state of Minnesota?
Question's been asked of the testifiers, how many times you've been prosecuted, is that right?
No, how many times they have prosecuted, or how many times there have been arrests based on current law, because what we're hearing from this bill clearly state is redundant according to what current law says. There's already a gross misdemeanor for a lot of the things that are listed in this law. So are they applying current law and arresting people now?
So, Chair Scott, who is that question for?
For the woman at the table. Well, I don't remember her name.
I don't know. I mean, if you know the answer to that, you can answer, but I'm not going to ask you to cite prosecution statistics if you don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Scott, we could get back to you with prosecution numbers. I will say that we did call the police in Robbinsdale 6 times in 2019. We have not called them, and they resulted in no cease of behavior, partially because there is no ability to cease behavior under the current law, and partially because this is actually a proactive measure that we're hoping to do. Across the nation, over the last year, we saw 6,000 more instances of violence against women seeking reproductive services across the United States. And this is a proactive measure that we're hoping to pass in Minnesota, as 18 other states in Washington, D.C. have already passed proactive measures.
Thank you. Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's a highly subjective comment, in my opinion. And Mr. Walker, I guess this next question is for you and your experience, and you've been doing this a long time. How many people in your organization have been arrested or brought up on charges for inappropriate action outside of an abortion clinic?
Mr. Walker.
Since I've been there 12 years, none. Prior to that, there were what are termed as rescues before I was hired back in the 70s and 80s. Those are, quite frankly, to my mind, old offenses that don't really apply to today. I don't know what the other witness was talking about, 6,000 violent threats. I highly doubt that, because those laws are enforced in other places. And so I would imagine if they had any successful charges, I've never been charged with an offense, assaulting, intimidation, or anything like that. The 12 years I've been on the street.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one final question or comment. I see this as a ban on certain kinds of speech. And I believe that you can cloak it in all kinds of narrative, but at the bottom line, this is what this is getting at. And I would also just ask the chair if this bill is going to be going to public safety. I don't know what the route this bill is going to take.
Chair Scott, no. I've discussed this with Chair Mariani. This is another area of overlapping jurisdiction. It will be heard in this committee and not his.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that because, thank you, Mr. Chair, I think it needs to go to public safety. We've just heard what the testimony in favor of this bill was. They believe there are safety issues here, and to me, we are just addressing the legal side of it, not necessarily the public safety aspect of that. So,
last comment or question goes to Rep. Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted quickly to respond to Representative Johnson, who said he was talking about a protester bill, saying that it's inconvenient for folks to be protesting on the highway. Try being black and brown. It's an inconvenience of a lifetime. And to those who said this bill is overreaching, being redundant, just because you are not seeing it happening, you're not the bad actor, does not mean it's not happening. And the same way as you have the right to feel safe to protest, these patients should also feel the right to have that safe too. And so let's do the right thing and pass this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. There being no other comments before the committee, the chair's motion is that House File 3041 as amended be referred to the General Register. Roll call has been requested. Chair votes aye.
Chair Lesh.
Aye.
Vice Chair Moeller. Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Cantrell.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Considine.
Yes.
Representative Hassan. Representative Herr. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Yes.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Knorr.
Yes.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Zhang.
Yes.
On a vote of 8-7, the bill as amended is passed. House File 3041 as amended is referred to the General Register. The vote is 8-7. The bill passes. Thank you, members. I want to thank everyone for a respectful debate on this. This is not an easy issue. And I know that tensions are high. And folks did their best to keep their arguments to the legal issue at hand before us. This is, of course, the question of this is a proxy issue for the much deeper question, philosophical question, of where we approach this from. And that's what makes this very difficult. So the next bill, because we're over time, House File 3274 will be taken up next week. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, one thing I'm disappointed with, five new gross misdemeanor offenses. I think this bill should have gone to public safety, but it's over with. And the other thing on a lighter note, it's Shamrock Shake season. You've had a tradition of bringing Shamrock Shake. I'm just inquiring if you're planning to continue that.
No, Chair Johnson, that's been foisted on me for about 12 years now. And I'm sure something will probably happen on
Mr.
that.
Chair, I have a Shamrock outfit I'm waiting to wear.
That'll be a pretty decent trade-off if you show up in that, Representative Lucero. Thank you. There being no other business before a committee is adjourned.